earlier today, where she discussed Senator Al Franken kissing and groping her without her consent during a USO tour.
Oh, the comedian. I thought it was going to be I thought it was a joke. I was in bad taste, or I thought it was going to be funny, and I guess it wasn't, or, you know, it was poor taste or whatever.
Senator Tom Cotton, Republican from Arkansas, yesterday responded to the Democrats who are criticizing the Senate tax reform bill for repealing Obamacare's individual mandate, reminding them how the Obama administration argued before the Supreme Court that it actually was a tax.
The individual mandate is a tax, according not to me, not to Republicans, but to the Obama administration. That is what they argued in 2012 to the Supreme Court, even though he contended throughout the debate on Obamacare in 2009 and 2010 that it wasn't a tax. And the Supreme Court in 2012 upheld it as a tax.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Howdy, folks. Colonel Sanders here with another important holiday message from KFC. This year, don't waste your holiday vacation cooking dinner. Instead, waste it watching TV or catching up on sleep. And let me prepare a home-style meal for the family with a KFC $20 fill-up. That's 8 pieces of delicious original recipe chicken, 2 large mashed potatoes and gravy, a large coleslaw, and 4 biscuits. Just $20. All right, get along now. That TV isn't going to watch itself. KFC, it's finger-licking good. Available for a limited time only. Pricing and participation may vary. Tax extra.
A proposed new gun law is something its authors hope both parties will go for. USA Radio's Chris Barnes reports from Washington.
A bipartisan group of senators unveiling legislation that would improve background checks for gun sales. Led by Republican John Cornyn of Texas and Democrat Chris Murphy of Connecticut, the bill would give states incentives to strengthen the national instant criminal background check system to ensure all background check information is uploaded and verified. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Hillary Clinton responded yesterday to the news that the Trump administration is considering appointing a special counsel to investigate her possible ties to the Uranium One deal.
This is such an abuse of power, and it goes right at the rule of law.
And Clinton continued,
this Uranium One story has been debunked countless times by members of the press, by independent experts. It is nothing but a false charge that the Trump administration is trying to drum up in order to avoid attention being directed at them.
Now, what was not asked in the Mother Jones exclusive interview was the fact that the Clinton Foundation received donations of $145 million from Canadian executives who benefited from that sale of the uranium to the Russians.
And finally, the Great American Smokeout is underway today. The event encourages smokers to kick the habit for at least one day. You're listening to USA Radio News.
night's MTV Music Awards, he thanked the fans for making the film such a hit as well.
You brought awareness to the men and women and their families in the military and what they do for us on a daily basis. It's because of what you guys did and how you came out for the movie. Chris Kyle would have turned 41 4 days ago. Chris, this is for you.
Cooper was shut out of the Academy Awards and Golden Globe Awards earlier this year. The film was based on the best-selling autobiography of the same name and was a box office smash. Kyle is known as the most lethal sniper in U.S. history. Thousands are expected to say goodbye to inspirational college basketball player Lauryn Hill during a public memorial today in Cincinnati. She lost her battle with cancer last week. The 19-year-old had an operable brain tumor and was initially given just weeks to live, but she played the entire season and raised more than $1 million for cancer research. This is USA Headline News.
Would you wait several days for your cell phone to fully charge? Would you wait several days to feel the full effect of relief from your nasal congestion? Flonase Allergy Relief Nasal Spray could take that long. But if you're congested now and you want powerful relief now, use Afrin No Drip. Afrin starts working in seconds and keeps working for 12 hours. So why wait several days to feel the full effect? When you can start to get relief in seconds with Afrin. Afrin, powerful congestion relief without the wait. Use as directed.
A 2-year-old boy is lucky he wasn't seriously hurt or worse after he fell into a cheetah pen at the Cleveland Zoo Saturday. Zoo spokesman Dr. Christopher Kuhar says the child's mother was holding him over an observation wall when she dropped him.
While this incident is disturbing to everyone, we are glad the injuries were not any more severe. Unfortunately, we have a number of eyewitnesses accounts that point to the strong likelihood that the child was dangled over the railing.
Fortunately, the two cats never approached the boy and he was rescued from the enclosure. The boy was taken to the hospital to be treated for a leg injury from the fall. Cleveland Metro Parks say they plan to press for misdemeanor child endangerment charges against the parents.
Safety is a top priority here, and we wish the child the best.
A Lake Zurich, Illinois sixth grader who finished tied for the first place in ESPN's Bracket Challenge is being awarded after all. The founders of the weight loss company Visalus decided to step in and provide Sam Holt with their own prize. Sam's mother, Liz, expressed her thanks on a video posted to the company's YouTube page.
Ryan, Nick, and Blake are generously offering Sam a $20,000 college scholarship.
The 12-year-old beat out more than 11 million other participants to finish tied for first in the bracket challenge, but was ineligible to receive ESPN's grand prize because he is not 18. One of the prizes was a $20,000 gift card to Best Buy. You can find more special interest stories, news, and, of course, headlines online anytime at usaheadlinenews.com. I'm Ron Taylor, and you're listening to USA Headline News.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
It's 9:07, time for Hunter Chamber Radio Weather. We're at 48 degrees and partly cloudy skies in Flemington. Today is Monday, April 13, 2015. There will be sun and clouds mixed today, a high of 73. Doesn't that sound great? Wind south at 10 to 15 miles an hour. It'll be partly cloudy skies this evening, increasing clouds with periods of showers late. A low of 53, wind south-southwest at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Chance of rain is 70%. Cloudy and periods of rain early tomorrow, a high of 66, winds light and variable, chance of rain 90%. On Wednesday, some clouds in the morning will give way to mainly sunny skies in the afternoon, a high of 66. Partly cloudy, 62 on Thursday the 16th. Friday, cloudy early with showers in the afternoon, a high of 65 and chance of rain is 60%. And considerable cloudiness with occasional rain showers on Saturday, a high of 68.
MTV Music Awards, he thanked the fans for making the film such a hit as well.
You brought awareness to the men and women and their families in the military and what they do for us on a daily basis. It's because of what you guys did and how you came out for the movie. Chris Kyle would have turned 41 4 days ago. Chris, this is for you.
Cooper was shut out of the Academy Awards and Golden Globe Awards earlier this year. The film was based on the best-selling autobiography of the same name and was a box office smash. Kyle is known as the most lethal sniper in U.S. history. Thousands are expected to say goodbye to inspirational college basketball player Lauryn Hill during a public memorial today in Cincinnati. She lost her battle with cancer last week. The 19-year-old had an operable brain tumor and was initially given just weeks to live, but she played the entire season and raised more than $1 million for cancer research. This is USA Headline News.
Would you wait several days for your cell phone to fully charge? Would you wait several days to feel the full effect of relief from your nasal congestion? Flonase Allergy Relief Nasal Spray could take that long. But if you're congested now and you want powerful relief now, use Afrin No Drip. Afrin starts working in seconds and keeps working for 12 hours. So why wait several days to feel the full effect?
When
you can start to get relief in seconds with Afrin. Afrin, powerful congestion relief without the wait. Use as directed.
A 2-year-old boy is lucky he wasn't seriously hurt or worse after he fell into a cheetah pen at the Cleveland Zoo Saturday. Zoo spokesman Dr. Christopher Kuhar says the child's mother was holding him over an observation wall when she dropped him.
While this incident is disturbing to everyone, we are glad the injuries were not any more severe. Unfortunately, we have a number of eyewitnesses accounts that point to the strong likelihood that the child was dangled over the railing.
Fortunately, the two cats never approached the boy and he was rescued from the enclosure. The boy was taken to the hospital to be treated for a leg injury from the fall. Cleveland Metro Parks say they plan to press for misdemeanor child endangerment charges against the parents.
Safety is a top priority here, and we wish the child the best.
A Lake Zurich, Illinois sixth grader who finished tied for the first place in ESPN's Bracket Challenge is being awarded after all. The founders of the weight loss company Visalis decided to step in and provide Sam Holt with their own prize. Sam's mother, Liz, expressed her thanks on a video posted to the company's YouTube page.
Ryan, Nick, and Blake are generously offering Sam a $20,000 college scholarship.
The 12-year-old beat out more than 11 million other participants to finish tied for first in the bracket challenge, but was ineligible to receive ESPN's grand prize because he is not 18. One of the prizes was a $20,000 gift card to Best Buy. You can find more special interest stories, news, and, of course, headlines online anytime at usaheadlinenews.com. I'm Ron Taylor, and you're listening to USA Headline News.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
It's 9:07, time for Hunter Chamber Radio weather. We're at 48 degrees and partly cloudy skies in Flemington. Today is Monday, April 13, 2015. There will be sun and clouds mixed today, a high of 73. Doesn't that sound great? Winds south at 10 to 15 miles an hour. It'll be partly cloudy skies this evening, increasing clouds with periods of showers late. A low of 53, winds south-southwest at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Chance of rain is 70%. Cloudy and periods of rain early tomorrow, a high of 66, winds light and variable, chance of rain 90%. On Wednesday, some clouds in the morning will give way to mainly sunny skies in the afternoon, a high of 66. Partly cloudy, 62 on Thursday the 16th. Friday, cloudy early with showers in the afternoon, a high of 65 and chance of rain is 60%. And considerable cloudiness with occasional rain showers on Saturday, a high of 68. Temperatures in our area. I have 50 right now in over by the county complex, 48 in Reddington, 49 in Highbridge, and 52 in Phillipsburg, 49 in the Amwells. Good morning, Hunterdon. Hunter Chamber Radio weather. Well, good morning, Hunter, and welcome back to Good Morning, Hunter, and HuntChamberRadio.com. Got my guests here from the Freedom House Foundation of New Jersey And we have Glenn King, who's the executive director of Freedom House, and Dawn Nill, who is the director of marketing and development. They're having an upcoming 5K race on May 9th in the area, and we felt we would like to bring them in, talk about what Freedom House is all about, and learn about that 5K race and walk for next month. So we're going to bring everybody in here. Good morning, Glenn. How are you?
Good morning.
Welcome to HunterandChamberRadio.com. You are the executive director of Freedom House. Tell us a little bit about what Freedom House is.
Freedom House provides residential long-term treatment for adult males that are diagnosed with substance use disorders.
Mm-hmm.
We also provide case management for women and children, women who are in jeopardy of losing their children,
mm-hmm.
normally have past addiction problems. So we will take the women and put them into our transitional living house, provide case management for them and the children, and advocate for them to be reunited through their children. These women are typically in jeopardy of losing their children because of their prior addiction,
right.
So they have open cases with the Division of Youth and Family Services, or now called Child Protection.
All right.
And our adult males treatment program is long-term residential in a halfway house setting. And what that means is they're pretty much halfway out in the community and halfway in treatment.
Mm-hmm.
That consists of individual counseling, group counseling, didactic sessions. Each person is assigned a primary counselor. They stay there typically about 9 months on an average. And while they're there, they have to seek and maintain full-time employment. They have to make a contribution towards their room and board. In fact, half of what they make goes to pay for their room and board. One-third of what they make goes into the bank so they can establish independent living when they get out. And the remainder of their pay is for their toiletries and things of that nature.
Wow. Okay. We're going to cover a lot of that in detail in just a little bit. But you can hear that there's a tremendous amount of effort and activity that goes on at Freedom House. And Dawn, welcome to Good Morning Hunterdon. You are the Director of Marketing and Development. What does that entail for Freedom House?
Well, good morning. I am fairly new to Freedom House, only been in the position for 6 weeks now, so still learning.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been brought on board to raise the visibility of the organization in the communities that we serve and to raise the much-needed funds to be able to support the services and programs.
Excellent. What did you have marketing and fundraising and development background before this?
Yes, I've been in the nonprofit community for over 25 years.
Okay.
Worked for a local YMCA in New Jersey and then also an elder care organization out in Union County.
Mm-hmm.
And so my passion to use my skills to help raise visibility and the much-needed funds.
Sure.
I'm looking forward to this and working with Glenn and his team.
Neat. So was there an attraction to this particular fundraising? Did you see a new challenge that you were taking on? What was the game plan?
Yes, it's definitely a new challenge. I think any fundraisers out there in the community will agree that our job is to really, raise the visibility, bring in the much-needed funds, get an organization on an even keel,
mm-hmm.
so that they can continue to sustain themselves. And Freedom House is much needed to have those funds. It costs about $25,000 to put someone through the program.
Yeah,
that's no small chunk of change,
yeah.
And we heavily rely on the support from private donations, foundations, corporations, and the events that we have coming up.
Yeah. It's been a long couple of years, about 8 years we've been going through this recession, and so, mm-hmm. so institutions and organizations like yours, it's trying to keep itself going and sustainable. It's a tough game. So fortunately, I think we're past the tough spot, but still, you're competing for all the same dollars that are out there. So I'm glad we could bring you folks in to talk about Freedom House. Mr. King, how did you get involved with Freedom House?
Well, I have a long history with Freedom House.
Okay.
In fact, In 1990, I was introduced to Freedom House by way of being a resident. So I am now recovering from substance disorders for 24 years.
Wow. Congratulations.
I came to Freedom House in 1990. My predecessor, who was Fred Real, brought me there as a resident on Christmas Eve of 1990.
Wow.
And I've been around the organization ever since, of course, in a different capacity. Mm-hmm. I came as a resident. I've worked as a driver. After I left Freedom House, I drove for about 6 months or so, or maybe a little less than 6 months. I wanted to become a counselor. And from becoming after driving and becoming a counselor, I had to get certified. So I went to school and got my certification as a drug and alcohol counselor. I stayed there for about 5 years. I left and went to run a program in Paterson, New Jersey, called Millets and Fenwick House. I was then, after 2 years, recruited back to Freedom House in the position of a senior counselor. I then went back to school. I got my master's degree. After getting my master's degree, I was promoted to clinical director. And since then, I've become a licensed clinical alcohol and drug counselor, which is a step above being a certified alcohol and drug counselor. And after becoming the clinical director, I was then promoted in 2013 to executive director. So, I have a long time.
That's unbelievable. I mean, it's believable. It's a tremendous story. Really, when residents come into Freedom House, and are they aware of everything that you went through from 1990 to 2000? That's a 23-year period of unbelievable achievement.
I try to make the residents aware. I try to make the community aware. And the reason I do that, because of all of the stigma that's out there about alcoholics and addicts. Mm-hmm. I believe strongly in alumni development. A good percentage of our employees are alumnus of the program.
Right.
Like I said, we believe strongly in alumni development. I believe that strong alumni go back into community and restore hope, because there's a lot of people that still don't believe in what we do. Mm-hmm. Don't believe that maybe people really need treatment. It's something that you can just kick. So you don't get the support. You don't get people wrapping around that, and it's not supported in the way that it should be. And, of course, nowadays we know we can't afford not to do that with what's going on.
No.
But alumni go back into the community and they see a guy like maybe myself, who was maybe in and out of jail, prison. You know, I found myself at one time being down in Rahway Prison, and that was after coming out of the military. I was in the service for about 8 years, and I was a drill sergeant. I was in the 82nd Airborne Division, and I was in the 1st Ranger Battalion for a year and a half. So I had a promising career going, but that career came to an end because of my alcohol and drug use.
Wow. You could write a book. You could absolutely write a book.
In fact, I'm in the process of doing
it. I hope so, sir, because that is just amazing. That is just amazing. My goodness. All right. Mr. King has thrown a whole bunch of stuff at me. I'm going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and kind of break all that down, and we'll be right back with more of Good Morning Hunter and Hunter Chipper Rick Hunter.
I'm Dave Lang with Insight Financial Services and a proud member of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. I believe that our participation and all of the opportunities that the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce offers to its members strongly contributes to our success.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is a Forward New Jersey Coalition member.
For too long in America, we've been putting off funding infrastructure, saying we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But on August 1st, 2007, hundreds of vehicles tried crossing the I-35 bridge in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and disaster struck. The I-35 bridge collapsed. 13 people were killed, 145 were injured, and traffic was obstructed for over a year. It didn't have to happen. Years before, inspectors had rated the bridge structurally deficient, but they were ignored. In New Jersey, we have 479 bridges carrying 8.2 million vehicles a day. that are rated worse, and we can't afford to ignore that. As of June 30th, the state's Transportation Trust Fund will be empty. We need to replenish it so that our roads and bridges can be fixed and future problems prevented. And we can. Go to ForwardNewJersey.com to find out how. Paid for by Forward New Jersey.
Welcome back to Good Morning Hunter and HuntChamberRadio.com. I have Glenn King, Executive Director of Freedom House, and Dawn Nill, the Director of Marketing and Development, with me today. And Mr. King, that story is just amazing, and we talked a little bit off air about it's just, that book needs to be written, absolutely 100%, and I don't know if it's going to make a movie or anything, but it's that alone is just going to be incredible. But so now you obviously relate to it personally because of your trajectory through Freedom House. How does an individual get referred to Freedom House? How do they learn about it? And I imagine that there's a very small group of people that you can only handle at one time. So how do you make that determination as to who should be showing up at your doorstep?
Yes, we have 41 beds. Mm-hmm. So there is an assessment process. Mm-hmm. Now, how we get referrals are from various sources. We get them from the criminal justice system. We get them from family and friends. We get them from other rehabilitation centers. We get them from folks looking at the internet, our website. And that's where the referrals come from. After they are referred to Freedom House, we do an assessment process, which starts at a phone screen. This first contact is usually made over the phone. Someone may call, or they may even walk in, and we'll do a screening. After we've done a screening, we'll do a more comprehensive assessment. Mm-hmm. And based on that assessment, we can tell whether or not we need to replace them in our inpatient program. And I failed to mention that we also have an outpatient program as well.
Okay. Wow. All right. So you make that determination as to whether that individual needs to be inpatient, means that they're staying at the homes,
yes,
the residences.
They would be staying at the residence. And it's based on what we call the ASAM criteria. American Society of Addiction Medicine has a placement criteria. And it's just if you broke your leg and mm-hmm. the bone was sticking out, you would probably not go home that day. You'd probably stay inside the hospital.
Right.
But if it was just a broken bone, you could pretty much maybe put a cast on it, and you can probably send them you could send them home.
Mm-hmm.
So it's based on the severity of the person's addiction, just like it would be based on the severity of an injury.
Sure.
If someone was injured.
Sure. So you're going to make that determination, you and your counselors, after some type of review.
Yes.
Now, when I asked you about what Freedom House is, you gave me a pretty large summary, and I'm going to drill down a little bit. When somebody arrives, you obviously have to take them through a process. Now, there's that stereotypical 12-step process that we know percentages work only in a minor percentage. That's not what you guys do, right? It's the concept of getting somebody rehabilitated through Freedom House is you're trying to deal with their entire environment. So let's touch on that a little bit. When they're in the home, residential home, what are the types of programs and education you're providing them?
Well, we do utilize 12-step recovery, but that's only a support mechanism.
Right.
We have individuals that come in that have no basic living skills. They have no way of coping with their addiction.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting young folks in a program now that never had a job before.
Right.
So in some instances, you're doing habilitation, not rehabilitation. They're being introduced maybe to work for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Like myself, I had a job before, so it was just getting reconnected to that.
Right.
And there's a lot of folks that we are reconnecting to some of the basic living skills, and some never had those basic living skills, and they're getting them for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have maybe employment skills that we teach them, how to go out and seek and maintain full-time employment. We have them to learn how to cook, for the first time, and some maybe come in and had prior jobs as chefs, or maybe had their own restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
We,
so the you basically see the drug and alcohol behavior is a symptom of something deeper, that they really never could take care of themselves. And so you're trying to solve that problem before you get to even the drug and alcohol rehabilitation.
Absolutely. I think that when it's all said and done, drugs and alcohol were only a symptom of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So what we deal with the whole person. We try to take a more holistic approach.
Right.
Somewhere in that person's life, they picked up drugs and alcohol for some reason, because it did something for them. Meaning, for example, you could have a person that may be dealing with abandonment issues.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't deal with the root of that abandonment issue, that person will eventually, we may mask it by having them to go out and get a job and sit in groups and do certain things.
Right.
But sooner or later, if that root issue is not dealt with, then they're probably going to return to do what they always did.
Sure. Sure. So now, in addition, you're teaching them basic skills in their home, trying to give them, get them a job. And you also talked about how when they're earning that money, they're kind of paying their way for living at Freedom House for a while, but they're also saving money for after their departure. What type of jobs, what type of businesses are you introducing them to, and how are you soliciting and getting a buy-in from those businesses?
A lot of jobs depend on the skill level.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of jobs are obtained because people believe in what we do. There's some folks that still don't believe in what we do, so they won't give our guys an opportunity.
Right.
Unfortunately, with the alcoholic or drug addict or the recovering person, a lot of times because there's been a criminal element to it, and it's usually related to drugs and or alcohol. But we get some organizations that that understand, and they're willing to give our guys a chance.
Mm-hmm.
So the skill level is based on the individual and what types of job they get. It depends on a lot of times on who one's going to give them a chance.
Right.
I try to tell the guys when they first come into treatment, do not worry about getting the job, get a job.
Right.
Meaning, do not try to focus so much on your career, what you want to be doing down the road a piece, but focus more now and getting into the routine of getting up in the morning, going back to work. If you're working for the first time, you're being introduced to it. If you've been away from it, you're getting reunited to going back into the workforce. So mm-hmm. it varies.
Yeah. No, it's now, in addition to that, I'm going to make a small leap here, that there is an additional stigma of men who are afflicted with drug and alcohol addiction compared to women. I believe you have an extra step that you have to achieve to convince folks that men can be introduced into the workforce. Do you find that? Is that something that you're struggling with, or you have to make up that extra ground? Because certain shelters I've heard will not take men. They'll only take women.
Well, I think that in society as a whole, men and women are looked at differently when they're affected by drugs and alcohol and abuse.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I think when the children are taken out of the home, they usually refer to as she lost her children.
Right.
Well, the man lost his children too. And I think we need to hold men equally responsible for their role in the family as well as the woman. So they lost their children, and a man should be responsible, have to pay bills and be part of that reuniting process as well. And I think a lot of times people will be more sympathetic towards a woman in addiction versus a man in addiction. But I think that it affects both mm-hmm. evenly, and I think we need to hold both the man and the woman responsible, and we need to provide support for the men as well as the women. So there is some stigma around.
Yeah.
Stigma.
Yeah. The now, you said you had 41 beds. Now, you don't have it all in one building, right? You have a number of different houses that you maintain?
Well, we have 41 beds in our residential facility.
Mm-hmm.
And we have two transitional houses, actually three transitional houses for men as well. So when they finish treatment
at the 41,
they can go into transitional living, which is a step down. There is no treatment at the transitional house. Those are for men who need additional support after they finish treatment.
Right.
They can't afford to get out and pay $10, $11, $1,200 a month rent.
Sure.
So we have transitional living houses where they can live in a peer-supported environment, and they can save additional funds and perhaps have them go into an outpatient program such as the Freedom House outpatient. So we have those transition living houses, and one in Morristown, New Jersey, one in Mansfield, and one in Glen Gardner.
Okay. Wow. All right. So Morristown, obviously, a little bit more urban. Glen Gardner's got some opportunity. But yes. You're struggling with some transportation issues, I would imagine, as well.
Transportation is
yeah. I mean, Hunterdon County struggles.
And, you know, that's what a lot of things our funding sources, I think, don't fail to realize, that unlike some programs that are located in your urban areas, they can utilize public transportation. But we've borne an additional cost because of the transportation that we provide. We take these guys to the 12-step recovery meetings 2 to 3 nights per week. We take them to work. We pick them up from work. Right. If there's additional court proceedings they have to go to, we take them to court. So there is a transportation issue. We try to utilize the local link, but a lot of times because of timing, that doesn't work out.
No,
these guys are up in the morning at 4 o'clock and 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning going to work.
Yeah, no, it's a tough game. Now, what's the time frame? And I imagine it's different for each type of individual. But what's the expected time frame, and what is the intensity of which you are providing this type of education to a resident that shows up?
The average person is at Freedom House nowadays, so anywhere from, between 6 and 9 months.
Wow!
And it depends on the individual, because it's not time based; it's based on goal achievement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when that person achieves the goals that are set in their treatment plan, mm-hmm. then we can move them through the continuum of a care, so to speak. Freedom House is a very intense program. When these guys get up in the morning, they get up around 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. They go to work.
Right.
For those that are not working, they're working around the house all day, attending group sessions,
right.
doing chores around the house. When the guys return home from work, which is around 6:30 in the evening, they eat dinner together. Those that are not working, they will prepare dinner for those who are working. So those who don't have any cooking skills at all, we put them in the kitchen with some that do, and they learn how to cook.
Mm-hmm.
For those who go out to work, they come back to a nice meal, after which they will go out to maybe a 12-step recovery meeting or get involved with individual counseling or group counseling.
Mm-hmm.
By the time they shut it down, it's probably somewhere around 9:30 at night.
Yeah.
So it's a very, very rigid day. We got a very tight, no-nonsense, but sympathetic or compassionate program, I should say. And it's tough. It's probably one of the toughest things some of these guys are going to ever do.
And it's evidence-based. You're not going to let them move on out or until you see the goals being achieved.
Yes.
So what's your percentage of recovery and success?
I want to say about 45%, 45 to 47% of the individuals come through, make it through treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Of those who do make it through treatment, there's probably somewhere around, I think it's a 96% and 97% success rate, and that's mm-hmm. based on graduate surveys that we send out. We do those on a yearly basis.
Right.
So for those who do go through the program and make it through, there's a high percentage that they'll continue to stay right. sober. And those that do stay sober are those that normally stay connected to right. The things that we've taught them and stay involved with what's going on at Freedom House,
mm-hmm.
things are going on in the community, stay active.
So the original 46%, the ones that are, they're just departing, it's too grueling, it's too tough, and they're just not committed. That's pretty much what you're telling me. But the ones that do make it all the way through, that's where the 96% achievement of success is coming from.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go. It's a tough game. I've talked about this in a number of different situations where you're trying to change a tremendous amount about a person's and that person's life. So if they're not committed and they're not really buying into the whole situation, they're just not going to put up with it, pretty much. But
correct.
when they do, obviously you're achieving success. So that's how grueling it is. So we've learned about how much intensity and care and residential needs are required. You have how many? What's your staff numbers over there?
We have 4 counselors
mm-hmm.
and a clinical director that compose the clinical staff.
Right.
We also have a facility manager that oversees all of the logistical parts of the program. That person oversees the inpatient treatment as well as the transitional houses. We also have support staff of about of about 12.
Wow. So you have all that staff. You have 41 potential people that are living in the home, and then you have the transitional ones, and you have to maintain those homes. You have to maintain the business. That's where all the financing comes from, and obviously you're a nonprofit. So how do we achieve all that? Which brings in Dawn. Dawn Nill is the marketing and development director. And so, Dawn, we're trying to achieve a budget to make all this go. So you've come in 6 weeks ago. It's always a challenge, is it not?
Yes, it's always a challenge, and there's so many not worthy nonprofits out there. And, you know, donors have become very sophisticated, which is a good thing. And you mentioned before the recession, and, you know, in our field, we're seeing that donors are, you know, being more cautious where they are putting their money and want to see impact and outcome.
Right. So now we're looking for fundraising ways to achieve this. One of them happens to be the 5K race, walk and race, walk and run, right? That's the official name. And that's taking place on May 9th?
Correct.
So what are you looking for at this point? You're obviously looking for people to participate on that day. So
absolutely.
How do we get involved?
Well, it is the day before Mother's Day, so the weather is getting beautiful out there. So
yes.
We hope that people will come out with their moms, with their kids, with their entire families, their dogs, come out and walk and run on Saturday, May 9th. Mm-hmm. And you can pre-register by visiting our website, or you can actually even show up that morning out at Spruce Run Recreation Area and sign up and join us.
So what when somebody shows up, what's the game plan? There's a competitive part to this as well?
We are a sanctioned race with the USATF, and it is a certified course. So those hardcore runners out there, these will count. Also, we're a Grand Prix race, and so you can earn points towards some merchandise also through the USATF.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, most importantly, it's raising funds to help our family afterward, which is our women's program.
Okay. Is there sponsorships as well?
Absolutely.
Okay. What goes
on
there?
So there are sponsorship opportunities. We are coming up closely to the deadline, so please consider this week reaching out to us.
Mm-hmm.
There are sponsorships starting at $100 to get your name on the back of the race t-shirt, all the way up to being the title sponsor at a range of $5,000.
Okay. So we have all those opportunities there. And so you could be part of the 5K race, or you could be just go out and do a nice little walk and register to do that and enjoy the day and perhaps, earn, like you said, earn some points for the racing. It's not the only fundraiser you folks do, right?
No, it is not. We do also have a golf outing that will be taking place on Wednesday, July 15th at Fiddler's Elbow. So mark your calendars also for that and circle back to us. It'll be a beautiful event, also raising some funds. And if, you know, you're not a golfer, you're not a walker, you're not a runner, there's multiple opportunities to support the organization, writing a check, introducing us to your corporation. We do take matching gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you happen to be part of a family foundation, we would love to speak to you about that also.
Yep. So for more of a legacy or an estate type donation as well. Very neat. What type of budget are you working with, Mr. King, to try and achieve all this?
Are you asking about our annual budget?
Yeah. I mean, you're trying to achieve a tremendous amount with 41 people. I don't need, you know, specific dollars and cents, but it's just I just find it an amazing amount of money that you need to capture and maintain in order to do what you do and make it successful. So you have a foundation, right? In addition to the Freedom House. So there's two separate organizations, right?
Yeah. It takes a lot to put someone through treatment. In fact,
sure.
We're typically paid by the state to put an individual through is not enough.
Right.
So we have to do additional fundraising activities in order to make the program a success.
Yeah.
So it does take a lot, and we need all the support that we can get.
Mm-hmm. Are there grants out there that you guys are able to capture, or is that kind of drying up? And I ask that only because I just don't know how much the public, or the governmental organizations, the institutional organizations, they understand that there's an epidemic here, but we've been talking about this issue for so long. I just wonder if they just hear it as white noise. Do you get involved, or do you see the same amount of grants available to you that you did years ago?
I see less grants.
Yeah.
I see less money coming from the government, but I see more demands being put on the dollars that we do get.
Right.
So much that some organizations are being regulated or forced out of business.
Mm-hmm.
But we definitely want to see Freedom House continue to flourish and do the things that we've been doing for the past 29 years.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's another Glenn King out there who's been in and out of institutions, suffering from the grips of addiction, and I'd like to see that individual get the same opportunity that I had.
And when you do the movie rights for your bio, you'll be able to cover it all soon. Mm-hmm. I assume. I've been reading, and it's coming out all the time. The world of drug and alcohol addiction is changing. We now have the ability to get cheaper adulterated heroin compared to, I guess, the fad of the 1990s and late early 2000s was crack and cocaine. Do you change your education, and is it a harder thing to achieve to get folks in that are coming in with that addiction versus a cocaine habit versus an alcohol habit?
Well, for one, the kids are a lot younger that are coming into treatment, so we have to change our treatment approach.
Right.
There's an ability to – you have to have the ability to determine where that person is at. They are moving through different stages of change, and a lot of times they come in, they are not even contemplating changes. So they have to meet that individual where they're at,
right?
And it's very challenging, but we're able to do it now. What I see is the drugs have become more addictive. For instance, the heroin that they have out now is a lot more addictive,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of it is—it's not just heroin that they're putting in these drugs. There's a lot of other drugs that are packaged along with the heroin. I had an individual that come tell me, says, "Glenn, you know, they tested me for heroin, and a lot of other drugs came up." He says, "And I didn't take none of those drugs that they say I took." But actually, he did, because
it's
crap that's being put into it to hook that person.
Wow!
Even the marijuana that's out nowadays is a lot more stronger than it was, back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm seeing that kids are a lot younger using drugs. I had heard a story of someone who was 12 or 13 years old that was in a detox from heroin.
Oh my!
In my opinion, this kid should have been someplace sucking on a lollipop, but he's using he's using heroin.
But he was in an environment that was making that available to him.
An environment that made it available. I tell parents when I go out and do my talk to make sure you know what's in your medicine cabinet.
Oh yeah.
A lot of times it starts with the medicine cabinet. Sometimes it starts with maybe a sports injury,
mm-hmm.
and you have maybe doctors that probably should be a little more educated and receive a lot more curriculum when they go through school on addictions, because you'll be surprised that a lot are not very well educated, or I don't know if they're concerned or not, mm-hmm. but it's a problem.
I talk about that pretty regularly here because we talk about the drop boxes that are available. I would go as far as to say that it might not be the parents' medicine cabinet, but it could be the grandma and grandpa's medicine cabinet.
Absolutely.
Because there's a lot of expired stuff hanging out there, and grandma and grandpa, uncle, aunt are not keeping tabs on that stuff. So a kid can go into a bathroom over there, load their pockets, leave the vials there, and they're making all sorts of crazy cocktails nowadays with
these. And I've heard of these kids that have gone to what we call a farm party. And when I first heard they're having a farm party, I'm thinking that they're having it someplace on someone's farm next to the barn.
Right.
But what they were actually talking about was a pharmacology party.
PHARM.
Right, PH. And they actually take all of these drugs and put them into one bowl, all types of drugs, and you don't know what you're taking. Take a handful and take them. And that is
the most
insane thing.
You don't know what you're doing.
You don't know what you're doing.
Oh, my. And it's this is the other issue that I imagine, which is driving this. Because they're stealing them, we're not dealing with a lot of money anymore. It used to be that cocaine and marijuana and crack was expensive.
Yes.
But now we're getting it at a lot cheaper rate, if not free, because we're just flat out stealing it. So
right.
So it's becoming more prevalent in younger kids.
A lot more prevalent in younger kids. They start off maybe taking these pills that are a lot expensive. If you're coming off an injury, pills can cost $15, $25, whereas you can get a bag of heroin for maybe $5.
There you go.
It's a lot cheaper.
Crazy. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more of Glenn King and Dawn Mill. We'll be right back.
This is psychic medium Trish Woods with the program Afterlife Real Life that airs every Thursday from 1 to 3 p.m. My co-host is psychic medium Jane Davidson from the United Kingdom. We have listeners and callers from all over the world. We're looking forward to hearing what you want to know about with metaphysics, spirituality, personal spirit experiences, psychic work, and more. From 1 to 3 p.m. every Thursday, you can call in or tune in, asking Jane and I your questions, your personal ideas, and maybe getting help with your own personal life. Afterlife Real Life, every Thursday, 1 to 3 p.m.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weichert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime. And selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 and Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technology to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
Welcome back to Good Morning, 100 and 100 Chamber Radio.com. Glenn King, Executive Director of Freedom House of New Jersey. And Dawn Nill, the Director of Marketing and Development, is with me talking about Freedom House and the upcoming charity events. Mr. King, your story is remarkable, but I imagine because you have 96% success rate that there's many more out there that you've experienced. What kind of other achievements can you count on, can we count on from the past?
Well, I'm just one of many. We have folks that have completed treatment that went on to hold a seat on Wall Street. We have licensed electricians, licensed plumbers. We've had people that had that have businesses as contractors, IT people. So there are many, many success stories out there. We've trained at Freedom House at least five other people that have become certified alcohol and drug counselors in the state of New Jersey.
So they're using their own experience as being that specific to help others. That's awesome.
Absolutely. So what we do at Freedom House, we take tax burdens and make taxpayers out of them.
Amazing. That's an amazing story all the way around. You brought this up earlier, and I blew it. I wanted to get back to it, so I'm going to do it now. You talked about, in addition to the men and the men residential programs, there's another program that deals with women and women and their children. Can you just go through a little bit about how that differs from the male residential treatment?
Yes, that program is called the Family Afterward,
mm-hmm.
and it's for women who have a case with the Division of Youth and Family Services and Protective Services.
Right.
They may be in jeopardy of losing their children. Without the proper case management and housing, they may never be reunited with their children. What we do at Freedom House, we provide intensive case management for that mother and their child and go to the Division of Youth and Family and Protective Services,
mm-hmm.
and the courts, and advocate for them after the period of time they've been stable and after supervision and, like I said, intense case management,
right.
for them to get their children back.
So that still involves potentially a drug and alcohol addiction, but it's causing them to be considered to lose or foster care of their families.
Yes.
So you're still working on, you're still using your expertise and your skills, but you're now using it for another reason and another target. Is that right?
Absolutely. And the women that come through the Family Afterward program are typically stable before they get there. They're not under the influence of any alcohol and drugs.
Okay.
They usually have completed a short-term or a long-term program. So by the time they get to us, they usually have anywhere from 3 to 6 months of sobriety.
Uh-huh. So you're taking the transition houses instead of the actual residential?
Yes.
Okay. And now at this point, they're with their families?
Some are with their children and some are not. Some bring the children with them,
mm-hmm.
and some they have visitation rights, so may be supervised by the state of New Jersey.
Right.
But after a period of time, if what we do is successful, then they are reunited with their children and then allowed to live in the home with their children.
Neat. Now, I didn't bring this up before, but I guess I'm curious. Is anybody from the state of New Jersey can show up and be referred to you? Is it just locally to Hunterdon County?
Well, anyone throughout the state of New Jersey. We have state funding. We get county funding.
Mm-hmm.
We also have some people that call from the other side of the country, and they will have to be either.
You have that reputation.
Yes, we do.
Nice.
We've been in operation for almost 30 years now.
Mm-hmm. 30 years now, and you were there in 1990, so you were there at the beginning.
Yeah,
pretty
think,
close to the beginning.
I think Freedom House is definitely in my blood. You know, I cut myself and Freedom House comes up. You know?
Wow.
Been here for quite a while.
Unbelievable. It's quite a remarkable story, Mr. King, and I appreciate everything you've explained to us. And obviously, it's a viable program. It's I love the fact that it's evidence based. That's the real key. That you guys are working on making sure that the goals are achieved as opposed to a time frame. And I have some anecdotal personal experiences that I've seen people go through other types of programs, not necessarily drug and alcohol, but the medical profession and the insurance companies drive it from a time-oriented, and that doesn't win. We don't succeed that way. So the fact that you are able to take folks and drive them through on an evidence-based, you don't move and you don't graduate and you don't transition until we see it, and the integrity of the program maintains and the reputation maintains as well. So it's obviously very important. It's successful, and it obviously needs a lot of funding. So how do people get in touch with you, A, to be referred to, B, to do charitable causes, C, to just get more information about Freedom House for the sake of getting the name out there? What's the contact information they should use?
So you